Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing.
Edmund Burke.
Welcome to Grimly.
Okay, but I think it's this and not that.
Okay.
So that's good. It's not new pee.
It's just...
same old pee.
It's just same old pee.
It's a little bit harder to clean, but that's okay.
Yeah, yeah. That sucks.
It's fine. All right.
Anyways, we're recording.
Oh, no!
Funny. Welcome to Grimly.
Welcome to Grimly.
I am Missy.
And I'm Meg.
Where and we just vanquished a wasp.
A beast.
It was a beast. It was a big fucking wasp.
It was enormous. Yes.
It was like we both handled it. We handled our
you
shit.
You did. You totally did it. It was your idea. You were the execution. You were the muscle. And I just found the materials.
Well, so, I couldn't have done it without you.
I would have just stared at it, hoping it left for a lot longer, like a lot longer.
Well, I mean, I didn't want it in here. I could tell you it was like making you nervous.
It was distract me the whole.
Yeah, we need to get this
God
motherfucker
forbid, it flies
out of
towards us in mid record, and we're screaming and running away.
Because yeah, it's not a bee. It wasn't like a sweet little baby bumblebee with a little fat bumblebee butt. It was like a fucking.
It was a huge. It was like one of those killer wasps, whatever those ones are.
Those like Asian wasps.
Yeah, those ones that killed honeybees.
Yeah, those ones were fucking intense.
It wasn't that big, but it was.
It was substantial.
Enormous. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. It was tapping on the window. You could hear it.
It was like the size smaller than my pinky. Half a pinky size.
Now we're just bragging. Now we just sound stupid.
It's huge. You had no business in the house. Right. That's all.
We're like those fishermen to be like, oh, you know that fish was this big. I was like, no. It was a wasp.
Nasty.
We are a lot bigger than them, but they are fucking nasty.
They're scary.
Yeah, I don't want to fuck with them. That's
for
sure.
Yeah, I don't want it in my house like ending up in my bedroom or something.
Right? Yeah, it probably would have flown over and just fucking gotten us at some point.
Yeah, you got like you're in the bathroom or taking a shower or something and now you're trapped in the bathroom with a wasp. Naked. Yeah. I can't. We need
naked with a wasp. That should be the next Naked and Afraid.
You saved my life. Thank you.
You're welcome. That's what I'm here for, you know? Saving lives and telling really bad stories.
I hope not.
No. So this story I originally saw on Drunk History.
Okay.
Do you remember Drunk History?
I do, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember like watching, because Drunk History is like a comedy show, but
it's
a good story.
They
had like some substantial stories on there though too. Like I kind of learned some history from Drunk History.
That's the point, right?
Yeah, yeah. I used to really want to be in that show.
Oh, okay.
Until I realized that it was like famous people, not just
regulars.
Yeah, regular willy nillies. Georgia from My Favorite Murder was on that show at one point.
Oh, nice.
She did the Circleville Letters.
Okay.
And she was really good.
Well, I think
she probably just maybe podcasts pretty drunk sometimes. And so it was just like, I felt like Georgia just telling a story.
She kept it together.
She kept it together.
Oh, well, I thought she got sober or something.
I don't know.
Like, maybe she just.
I think she stopped drinking for a while, but yeah, I think she like kind of occasionally has a drink every once in a while.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah. I mean, I guess probably the closest we'll ever get to us being on Drunk History is Chris Benoit. We were pretty toasted for that one.
Really? That was a fun one too.
Yeah, it was a fun one. It was a long episode.
Not a fun one. It was awful, tragic, but you know, there is some pop culture references there.
Yeah, yeah. It was a long episode.
True.
Yeah. So I think we just kind of continued to keep drinking and then it just kind of went off the rails at the end. But we were fine. I mean, we sounded fine.
Oops.
Yeah. If you want to hear us plastered, go listen to the Chris Benoit episode. Anyways, so this story is based out of Skidmore, Missouri. So Skidmore, Missouri is a tiny farming town in northwest Missouri, Nottoway County. It has a population right now of 245 people.
No.
Yeah. That's according to the 2020 census.
Where is it?
Northwest Missouri.
It's what's like, on the... What's the... What is the state that first sounds
like? There's Kansas.
Iowa?
I think it's Dakota. When did the... South Dakota? You know, I knew you were going to ask me this, and I didn't fucking look it up.
On the map.
I knew you were going to ask.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I should know better at this point.
Well.
You're like... You need the geography.
I do.
Okay. Let's look it up. Skidmore, Missouri. What is around you? So, there is...
Okay. It looks like Illinois is... I don't know if it touches, though.
Okay. Yeah. No. So, there's Iowa above it, Nebraska, Kansas. So, South Dakota is a little bit further away than I was thinking.
Iowa, Nebraska, Kansas.
Yeah. And then Illinois is on the other side, but we're northwest. So, it's northwest Missouri. So, Iowa is above it. Kansas and Nebraska are next to it.
Okay.
So, deep, deep farm country.
Okay.
Yeah. Predominantly, that's
all right. That makes sense.
Yeah. So, it was founded in the 1880s by Martin E. Skidmore. Hoping the town would grow around the Burlington Railroad that had come through the county.
Unfortunately, that didn't happen.
However, that never really happens.
That's too bad. He still has a town named after
him. He does, yeah. And so the town of Skidmore never has a population more than 600 people.
Wow. Never since the 1800s.
Mm-hmm. When it was 1880.
Wow.
Yeah. So most people in this tiny town are hardworking, law-abiding citizens.
I'm so excited for whatever this is going to be. Like, this is like one of the most remote places in the U.S.
Yeah. And they have lived in – most people there have lived in Skidmore for multiple generations. Like, that's the only reason why you're there at this point.
Damn.
However, one man would cause so much destruction and pain in this tiny town without any sort of repercussions – that the town itself decided to take matters into its own hands.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Because of vigilante justice.
This is the unsolved murder. Justice. Unsolved murder of Ken McElroy.
Okay. I think this is mildly familiar.
You know, I just said McElroy. It's McElroy.
Oh, McElroy. Okay.
His fucking name is spelled M-C-E-L-R-O-W, which is McElroy. There's no M-A-C in there.
Oh, just M and C.
M and C.
Maybe it's a little more Irish.
I don't know. I'm probably gonna say the name wrong at some other point in this episode. Just
McElroy. Why didn't you just put an A in there for your own notes?
I don't know. I should have. anyways, so Ken Rex McElroy was over 6 feet tall, had jet black hair, massive sideburns, blue eyes that were described as lifeless,
and could make Irish perhaps. They have dark hair, darker features.
Black, you just said black Irish.
Black Irish is a type of Irish people.
Oh, he's not a black man.
No, they're not black.
What the fuck are you talking about?
We'll talk about it. It's not a racist thing I'm saying. I don't think so. They are like a type. They're like a... The Irish people that...
Are you talking about like alabaster, like dark hair, very light skin...
No, so it's like the version of Irish people that aren't gingers.
Yeah.
Yeah. They call them Black Irish.
I have never heard that before in my life.
I heard it from somebody who was Black
That makes Irish. Sense. That makes sense because Karen from My Favorite Murder is Irish and she has dark hair and blue eyes.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So not racist. I'm just stupid.
No. No, it sounds racist. Pretty racist.
Yeah, yeah, it's not. it can get there real quick. It can be taken out of context for sure.
All right, so he's tall, dark, and handsome.
Yeah, he's kind of, someone described him in a podcast I was listening to about this called Red Handed. Have you ever heard that podcast?
No.
They called him a fat Elvis impersonator.
Oh, okay.
And it seems very on the nose. This is him.
Oh, no, he does. He's got the sideburns.
He's got some major... Massive.
I have to walk back the handsome part, but a younger man
This is an older version of him.
A younger man might have been. He looks like he's hit the sauce a little too hard, too.
Well, you know, it's probably true. Especially if he's Black Irish.
Yeah, and the Midwestern portion.
Yes, for sure. Okay, so...
Ken, everybody today.
Seriously, let's piss everybody off. Let's really go for it. So Ken was born on June 16th, 1934. He was number 15 of 16 children.
Damn.
Leave her alone. So his parents, Tony and Mabel.
I mean, that's like, I don't know how many years women are like.
Fertile.
I guess probably more than 16. Well,
they got married young.
Yeah.
And like, you just keep cranking out kids.
Oh my God.
Just like perpetually fucking pregnant your for like 20 years. Sounds awful.
Yeah. Unless you had one every year, which would also be awful.
Yeah. It
sounds like.
Just, it's too many kids. And like, I mean, so his parents, Tony and Mabel, they were migrant farmers.
Mm.
And so I think because, you know, the time and the era they were in, you had kids as farmhands.
So you could, yeah. So yeah. You could, well, they could help you.
Put them to work.
Yeah. And if there's no one else around.
You know, just born with a pickaxe, ready to go.
It's just a business decision.
Gross. So gross. So, as I said, Tony and Mabel were migrant farmers bound to between Kansas and then the Ozarks before renting a farm in Skidmore.
Okay.
And so the farm was a rental, and basically what they would do is they would work the land, and like it was kind of their farm, and whoever they were renting to just kind of got a little bit of a crop.
Okay.
And that was like basically their rent payment.
Okay.
Sounds very Midwestern, like this is the deal.
True.
Honestly, like handshake.
Yeah.
Here you go, have some of the crop. Merry Christmas. I don't know. The house that they lived in Skidmore was a 2-bedroom farmhouse.
So okay, Kyling my house.
16 people.
Oh, and 2 bedrooms.
Yeah.
Damn.
And then at one point, they had 18 people living in the house because a few of his older siblings, remember he's a youngest of 16, a few of his older siblings had gotten married and they were all living in the house together.
Oh, like the married.
Yeah, damn, as a couple, as a married couple.
I'm like loft style. Like, how do you
fucking
even make
that work? Do you have like 3 high bunk beds?
I'm dying to know.
I don't know. It's
I'm gonna
probably not fun. No privacy.
Everybody sleeps on the floor. Oh, definitely not. But I'm like, where do you even sleep?
You probably all sleep on the floor.
Wow.
They probably have some of the younger kids probably all sleep together in a bed.
Yeah.
And then like as you get older, you kind of have to migrate to the floor.
Yikes.
So,
okay. Rough.
Yeah. So, during his childhood, no physical child abuse was ever reported in the home of Ken. And it was said that when Ken was older, Tony, his father, would kind of just let him do whatever. And just the kids in general do whatever.
Really?
I think just because he was tired.
Oh, okay.
Because, I mean, remember, he's number 15 of 16.
Yeah.
He's got to a point where you're like, I'm sick of raising children.
Yeah, the little ones can kind of do whatever.
Yeah, do what you want. So without that any sort of discipline or guidance, that kind of maybe speaks to how his character is later in life. Mm. Just maybe. It's just an interesting little factoid.
Yeah, not a lot
factoid.
Of one-on-one attention.
Yes, yes. It was also said that when Ken was a child, he had suffered some sort of major head injury by falling off of a hay wagon.
A red flag.
Yeah, head trauma is a thing when it comes to personality. I mean, Phineas Gage is like kind of he's the one that had like the tamping iron go through his face in like the 1800s.
Yes.
Like there's that whole study about him like completely changing personalities after that happened. So, I mean, we don't really know like what that means. Like, I mean, I think there's a couple other, like I think John Wayne Gacy had a head injury.
Yeah, a lot of serial killers.
Yeah, usually have some sort of like head injury as a child. So, I mean, I don't know if it's definitive evidence. I think it's interesting from what I've understood. Ken was illiterate and dropped out of school in the 8th grade.
Okay.
And
that's pretty far.
I know. I mean, that's kind of a failure on the teachers.
It was like his mom. I can't believe they even have a school.
I mean, but like, to be illiterate until 8th grade.
Oh, that he couldn't read by 8th grade.
Read.
Okay, that was my first thought, actually, was by 8th grade, damn. I would have hoped.
Like, no teacher was like, hey, we should maybe teach this kid.
I want to go back to it. Might have been his mama.
But all of his other siblings do had to read.
Oh, okay.
So he just didn't want to read? I don't know.
All right, maybe there's like a learning disability or something.
Maybe. Maybe it was a head injury. Who knows?
Okay.
So after he drops out, 1948 is when he drops out, he starts getting into petty crimes.
All right.
So
stealing from his brothers and sisters because there's no one around.
So besides the petty crimes, he also had a limited job, you know, field to get into. So Ken started working construction. And he also gets married to his first wife, Oleta, and he was 18, she was 16.
All right.
So they get married, they move to the Denver area.
Oh, that's a way.
Yeah, yeah. So it was during this time that he was working construction.
Okay.
That when he was 18, he suffered another head injury.
Oh, no.
At a construction site while living in Colorado. And some heavy cribbing, that's what it's called, I don't know what it is, fell approximately 30 feet onto Ken's head.
Okay.
So I'm imagining some sort of like bar or something. Okay. He was wearing a hard hat, but the cribbing did still penetrate, causing Ken to have a steel plate put into his head.
Okay.
So it is said that the steel plate implant caused him to have severe pain and blackouts for the rest of his life.
Damn, that sucks.
Yeah.
Man.
I'm not, you know what? I say all these things right now and you feel a little bit sorry for him. Trust me, you're going to stop feeling sorry for him.
That sounds awful.
Yeah. So after the injury at the construction site, it was obviously that Ken could no longer work in construction.
Okay, he had to quit.
Yes. And so
it doesn't matter.
I mean, I just think with the steel plate, maybe he just didn't want to.
Yeah.
Like
he couldn't work anymore.
Yeah. He just couldn't.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
What? the wasp is beating against the window. Oh, it's trying to.
The wasp is coming back for vengeance.
It's at another window.
Oh, you little fucker.
Oh man.
Well, good thing everything's. Oh, the back door's not closed.
I know, but it's such a small.
That wasp comes through the back door.
Oh my god!
So, Ken leaves construction job. Him and Oleta move back to Skidmore, and now that he's back in this small town that has not really a whole lot to do prospect wise when it comes to jobs, this is when he really starts leaning into like the life of crime.
Okay.
So. He begins actively and constantly stealing livestock from other families and farmers.
That's not cool.
In the area, and then he's selling the livestock either at auction or to other farmers, specifically.
I suspect that he's going to get caught for this.
Girl, you have no idea.
Like,
I'm just putting that out there right now.
Doesn't one farmer be like, "That I'm at the auction, that's my cow"?
Well, here's the thing. In Missouri... at this time, you didn't have to tag or brand all of your animals.
Okay.
So if your animal doesn't have like the little ear tag or a brand, which is awful, you couldn't prove it was yours.
You couldn't prove it. Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's how Ken was getting away with it.
Okay.
He also would usually use a female accomplice to sell off the livestock for him as another way to keep like the theft being tracked to him. Okay. And these are usually like, he was married, but he also, like, just had, like, a fuck ton of girlfriends on the side constantly.
Tall.
He was known at this time to be very charming. Tall. Whatever. Like, I don't know. Not great. So, Ken was actually able to make a decent amount of money doing this and was always kind of known to have a couple grand in cash in his pocket at this time. So, I mean, for a guy that really has no job skills or is illiterate,
sure, he's
doing well for himself.
Yeah.
Granted, it's not in a great way, but
no,
that's what he's doing.
Unscrupulous.
So by the 1960s, Ken had a few teenagers helping him steal whatever he could, whenever they could, from nearby farms. And even started selling furniture from people's homes that he was breaking into, and then started referring to himself as an antique dealer.
Oh my god. Terrible. He's like the first antique stealer.
Right, I promise you, it gets so much worse.
Okay.
So during this time, the local Notre Dame County sheriffs knew that Ken was stealing constantly, but Ken was turning these stolen goods so quickly that it was almost impossible to track like where the goods were going.
I don't understand who is buying all of these things in the town.
The small?
Yes.
Different. He would go like to different towns over. Okay. Or like, I mean, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's not great. Like, I don't know if people on Skidmore were buying this stuff specifically, but it definitely sounds like.
He was moving it.
He was moving it, no matter what.
Okay, I'm a little impressed. Like, I don't appreciate it. I don't support it, but I'm like, okay. Like, he had it go. He was doing it.
He was doing it, yeah. Okay, so During his... Okay, now we're going to get into the crimes that he's actually...
All right.
Specifically...
Buckle up.
...getting away with.
More crimes. We've only been talking about crimes.
Girl. I can guarantee you it gets so much worse.
Okay.
So, during his life, Kim was charged with 21 types of theft, which included stealing livestock, antiques, grain, and gasoline. He was also charged with arson, statutory rape, assault, and attempted murder.
All right.
However, Ken would constantly get off from these crimes.
Okay.
So the first reason why he was never seeing jail time for this stuff is because he would threaten, intimidate, and strip stock people that would press charges against him.
Okay.
And were like set to testify against him.
Yeah.
This included Ken parking outside of people's homes and places of work in his pickup truck, and he would just sit there with a rifle.
He's a big, scary guy.
Big, scary guy.
Yeah, okay.
He would do this, like, daily.
All right. Effective, obviously.
He also had a scumbag. The quintessential scumbag, I would say. Defense lawyer named Robert Gene McFadden, who was rumored to defend mob leaders, or really anyone that could pay his fees.
All right.
Just sounds like an ambulance chaser, I think is what a lot of people call him now. So, I watched a documentary about this stuff. So there's a moment in the documentary where Richard talks about how Ken walks into his office and he's kind of looking a little farmer-ish, I guess. Maybe blue jeans or like kind of ripped or faded, like overalls. Flannel overalls. And he's looking to hire Richard. And Richard tells him he thinks that he doesn't think Ken can afford him.
Sure.
Ken says, I'll be the judge of that, and throws a wad of cash on the table.
Alrighty. Yep.
And Robert's like, great. Sounds good. Let's enough do this. Said. Yeah. Enough said. You gave me the money. That's great. Sorry, not Robert. Richard. You're Richard also says that Ken was his best customer and was always on time for his appointments and always paid in cash.
Okay. Professional relationship here.
Trash. Yeah, it gets way worse with him. I promise you. So anytime Ken was charged with a crime, Rich would file multiple appeals and delay any sort of court proceedings.
I don't like that.
So then Ken would just go about doing his intimidation and stalking while they were waiting to go to trial from people. Until they gave up.
I don't like that at all.
Because Ken kind of essentially had this probably ideal of if there's no witnesses, then there's no case.
Yeah.
Which is the consistent thing throughout his entire, like, fucking reign of terror.
He's got a formula.
He's got a formula, and he's got a lawyer that's willing to, like, help him with that formula.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so now we're going to do another timeline of his crimes and general fucked upness.
Okay.
This is where it gets kind of bad. This is where the statutory rape stuff comes in and the assault stuff comes in specifically. So, just pure warning for anyone who is listening. So, in 1958, Ken meets a 15-year-old girl named Sharon, who he becomes, quote-unquote, romantically involved with.
He's still married.
He's still married to Aletta.
How old is he at this time, do we know?
58, he would be 24.
And she's how old?
15.
Okay.
However, at some point during this time when Ken is grooming Sharon... they get in a fight and he shoots her in the face during a fight. They're fighting in his truck. He shoots her in
his
the chin.
Wife?
No, Sharon.
No, his girl.
His girlfriend. His girlfriend. I say girlfriend with quotation marks because she's a fucking child. He shot her in the face.
Oh my God.
Because they were having some sort of fight. And in order to get out of being charged with the assault of Sharon, he divorces Aletta and then marries Sharon.
Oh no, Sharon. I'm worried about Sharon.
Yeah, there's going to be a couple of these girls.
Aletta just dodged a bullet, though. She doesn't move on.
I mean, yes. Unfortunately, I don't. Yeah. God. Okay, so before Sharon, he was involved with other girls that I couldn't find a lot of information about, but I feel like I just needed to list them. So before Sharon, he was involved with other girls. He was still married to Aletta, but he was involved with a girl named Barbara, who was 17. He was 24. And another girl named Donna, who was 13 years old.
Gross.
That's a fucking preteen.
That's so gross.
He would say that he likes them young because he likes, like, untouched things.
Oh.
Yeah. He would say that, like, openly and out at, like, the bars and stuff to people. So, in 1960, so 2 years after he, quote-unquote, marries Sharon, I put quotations around that because you can't consent when you're that young.
1916?
1960. We're in 1960.
Okay.
Yeah. So Sharon was 15 when they got married in 58. So now we're at 1960.
I wasn't keeping track of the...
There's a lot of names in this.
I just wasn't really keeping track of the dates, and now I'm confused.
He was born in 1934, so 1916 doesn't...
Okay, because I was like, I thought we were talking about the 1880s. But that was the town.
That was when the town was formed.
That's why I was like, 1960.
I am throwing a lot of dates at you.
I wasn't paying attention from the start. Of the day.
Perfect. Thank you. That mainly makes me feel great.
I got 1880 though, or 1888 or whatever. I was on track with you. I glossed over
you. Missed all the important stuff.
Okay. In the 60s.
1960.
Got it.
Ken meets another girl, a 14-year-old named Sally, and he starts a quote unquote relationship with her. He moves Sally in with him and Sharon. And he begins having kids with both Sally and Sharon.
Oh.
So he's sleeping with both of them. He's also beating both of these girls, sure, and kind of pinning them against each other.
Oh, yeah. Sounds like R. Kelly's house, honestly. Jesus. That sounds like.
Yeah. And anytime one of these girls' families tried to intervene, he would just threaten to kill them.
Oh, no.
And he would do the same thing. He would go to their house. He would, like, show up with a shotgun. He would, like, there was times he would, like, stop and, like, just shoot in the air in front of their property. He just would fucking harass these people until they, like, basically caved.
And you can just have my daughter then? It's awful.
Oh, wait. It gets worse.
I'm like, someone needs to know him. Pop his ass, honestly. Like, it's a waste of space. God. Free those girls.
Seriously. At one point in 1961, a now 19-year-old Sharon escapes Ken with their daughter and tells a social worker and the police what is happening in their home.
Okay.
Ken is charged with sexual assault. However, because Sharon is so young and she's been groomed by Ken, Ken convinces Sharon to come home.
Really?
Yeah. It's also because one of Ken's sisters had custody of their oldest daughter. Or their son, actually. She saw the daughter with him. There was a lot of kids.
Okay.
Also. So Ken convinces Sharon to come home because his sister, Ken's sister, had custody of Sharon's oldest child and convinced her if she comes home, she can see their son.
Yeah, that's... Ugh.
Instead, Ken beats the living shit out of her and he takes her home. And the son is with one of the sisters in California. So.
Okay.
At least he's... Far away from here, yes. After this, Sharon is kind of just beat down.
Yeah.
And, like, just kind of gives up. She stays with Ken after this and has 3 more children with him.
Okay.
In the end, Ken ends up having 10 kids.
All right.
So, just...
That's a lot.
It's a lot of kids. 4 years later, in 1964, Ken meets another young girl by the name of Alice Wood. She's 18. And he begins having a relationship with her. So in 1964, he is 30. Ugh. Mm-hmm. He kicks Sally out and moves in with Alice.
Okay.
Sally's 3 kids end up in foster care, and Sally either moves away or something because she kind of disappears from the picture entirely. There was a source that said that, like, her oldest son, like, kind of found her later in life, and she was, like, pretty bad shape, like, depressed, alcoholic, drug addict.
Oh, no. The trauma.
Like, yeah, and he was just like, there's really, I can't do anything for her.
Yeah.
Which is really fucking sad. Because this poor girl, like, she was a fucking teenager and had been, like, traumatized by a man.
Yes.
Like, almost double her age. And it just fucked her up for life.
Yeah.
So, Sharon at this time is living with Ken's family. Then they still have the farmhouse, the 2-bedroom farmhouse. And she's living there with his kids. She's staying with, like, his mom and sisters and stuff. So, along with the other girls, Alice had also suffered abuse from Ken. He would leave her for weeks on end and stay with, like, different girls around town and, like, the town's over. And if Alice questioned him or accused him of anything, he would beat the shit out of her.
Yeah.
And then eventually it just got so bad that she stopped, like, bringing it up.
Yeah.
It was probably almost like a relief when he was gone.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. And then around late 1969, Ken meets a 12-year-old.
No.
12-year-old. He is 35.
It's getting worse.
Uh-huh. He meets a 12-year-old girl named Trina McLeod and begins grooming and assaulting her as well. Aww. He would show up to her middle school.
I'm so repulsed.
And shower her with gifts and would, like, wait outside and pick her up from school almost every fucking day.
Is nobody watching or paying attention? No one thinks this is weird?
Teachers said some shit to her parents. But Trina's mother, for some reason, convinced herself that there was nothing going on between Ken and Trina. And then Trina's stepfather did try to intervene at one point, wow. But eventually he was also bullied into backing down as well.
Oh, God.
Because Ken was doing the same tactic.
Yeah,
like showing up to the house, being like, if you do anything, I'm going to fucking kill you.
Honestly, like, he must have been terrifying because I want to say, what a coward. Yeah. You got a 12-year-old.
Like, just young, susceptible girls who just are groomed.
And then you're like, oh, plus the guy's dangerous enough to scare me.
Uh-huh.
I guess she's on her own.
Good luck, Trina.
12-year-old.
12-year-old. Okay, so we're going to get into some bullshit that happens with Alice.
Okay.
So, during this time that Ken was grooming Trina and, like, started sleeping with a 12-year-old, Alice is pregnant. And she tries to leave Ken and goes home in a nearby town to live with her family.
Yeah.
Ken goes to the home where Alice is staying and tries to take her back with him. He also threatens to take their 3-year-old boy that they have with him. He's like, I'm going to take our kid.
Yeah.
Alice refuses to leave.
Good.
And begins guarding herself with a gun.
Sure. Yeah, got to.
Yeah. And then, so then Ken retaliates by shooting her stepfather.
What? Okay. Do we know the details?
I'm going to get to that. Yeah. His name is Otha. So he shoots her stepfather, Otha, through a window and hits him in the leg.
Okay.
Ken is charged with felony assault with the intent to do great bodily harm.
Yeah.
Fucking obviously.
It's really too bad she didn't defend herself at that time.
Yeah, yeah. So for the next 10 months, Ken harasses Alice and Otha, which include calling their home every day, telling him he's going to kill them if they continued with the case and if they were going to testify against him. Constantly, every day, calling, threatening them.
That's been scary.
So at one point, Alice's stepfather, Otha, was at a local tavern named Garland's where Ken walked in with a knife and threatened him. He then leaves, comes back with a 12-gauge shotgun, and locks the tavern doors behind him.
Oh my God.
Which is fucking straight up taking hostages.
Oh yeah.
Like, there's other people in this tavern. Ken walks up to Otha, puts a shotgun in his face, and threatens to shoot him from his toes into his face unless he says he will not testify against him. Otha does not back down.
Okay.
So everyone in the bar is obviously freaked the fuck out.
I'm still surprised nobody, again, so many opportunities to put one in his head. So many.
Like, just, I don't know, shoot him in the knee. Like, maybe in the dick, actually.
Kill him. Okay, but these aren't, you know, we know the facts. This
yeah.
is in retrospect.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, it,
I know. Mean, it's like the
we
same
know
thing.
No, he's got a 12-year-old locked up in his house.
It's also, that we think about, place. I mean, that was kind of common knowledge. He wasn't, like, hiding it. This is another town over. I will say that.
Okay, maybe some of them.
But.
Didn't know.
Maybe some of them didn't know. I mean, it's also just like he's a 6'4 dude. He's fucking scary with a shotgun.
I just have to imagine that more people in that bar had guns. Like the person behind the bar.
Probably. Yeah, absolutely. I want to try to, like, give some grace because I feel like we always talk about, I always talk about, like, you know, like, if someone were trying to hurt me, mm-hmm. I'd want to hurt them. Like, I want to fuck them up, kill them, dead, you know? But then, like, in the moment,
yeah,
could you actually do it? Like, it's...
I don't know. Maybe you're just like, we'll just see how this goes. This yeah. is a little scary. This guy's kind of riled right. up, but is he, like...
I mean, there's also, like, the whole thing of, like, flight, fight, or mm-hmm. freeze, you know?
Yeah.
I just, and, like, most know. People are probably just, like, this isn't going to escalate more than this. Like, there's no way he's going to shoot a bunch this guy in front of a bunch or of people maybe in a bar. Like,
if they, he's after this one guy. I'm not really scared. This is between these gentlemen.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
All right, whatever.
So, back at the bar, police show up. Arrest Ken. However, none of the patrons at the bar would give statements to what had happened.
Wow.
No one.
Maybe he did have a reputation.
He probably did have a reputation. He probably had a reputation in this town of, like, being a fucking scary dude and, like, don't fuck with him.
Yeah.
But, like, maybe they don't know, like, everything.
Yeah. It sounds like he must have had some kind of reputation.
Yes. So, Ken is charged with witness tampering and a bunch of other charges. And this is where his scumbag lawyer comes into the picture. So, McFadden was able to get the charges dropped to witness bribery.
Bribery.
Bribery. Which is a misdemeanor. This was mainly because the bartender that was working that night testified that he didn't see a thing.
No.
Okay. Which is the same fucking thing. It's just like...
Yeah.
Intimidation, scare tactics. Like, he's probably like this. And like, he wasn't even like threatening. He was threatening people, obviously. But he was also threatening people's families.
Yeah.
Like, which is fucking scary. Like, you know, it's one thing to like threaten, you know, somebody else. But I don't know. Okay. To it. All right, so the bartender wouldn't give a statement, and then another thing came up. Alice comes to the stand and testifies as a character witness for Ken.
Oh, damn.
Stating that he is a fine person and an outstanding citizen.
Oh, that's too bad.
Which is just like, these women feel like the definition of, not even women, girls, they feel like the definition mm-hmm. of fucking Stockholm Syndrome.
Well, she... might have just been lying. Like, I think Stockholm Syndrome is when you believe it.
That's true.
She
yeah.
was like, if I don't do this, he's going to kill me.
Yeah. True. Yeah. Or my kids or like someone in my family.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm so like, it's awful, all yeah. of it.
Yeah. It's also a crime to call him.
Yeah. It's also a crime to go and stand and lie. That's for sure.
He doesn't even care. He's the worst.
No, he doesn't. So after this, Ken was sentenced to 6 months in jail for the incident at the bar. However, which is a word I'm going to be saying a lot, the scumbag,
yes.
Filed multiple appeals and was able to get Ken out on bail. Then, for some reason, the case file was sealed and closed, and Ken didn't end up serving any time for this, and eventually all the charges were dropped.
How is that possible?
You know, I was, like, trying to, like, look into this more. I couldn't find anything. I think the lawyer maybe knew something on, like, the judge.
Hmm.
It was like a blackmail.
Interesting.
Or like a bribery.
Yeah, I paid somebody.
Paid somebody off.
Maybe it was he was involved in any kind of like organized crime. Maybe he shared some information.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I feel like there's some definitely some shitty shit going on there.
Oh.
I don't know. The judge could have been corrupt in some way mm-hmm. and like Robert tapped in on that. Like it seems like something happened behind the scenes for like all of that just to fucking go away.
I know. We couldn't even do 6 months.
Like, not even 6 months. Yeah. Okay. So, all that shit happens with Alice. Alice stays with Ken for a while. We're going to go back to the bullshit with Trina, unfortunately. Okay.
All right.
This kind of, like, I have to, like, kind of, like, bounce back and forth just because, like, the timeline.
Simultaneously?
Yeah. Simultaneously, also, the timeline is just very convoluted and complicated.
Sure.
And if you look up this story, you're going to get multiple timelines.
Okay.
So it was, like I told you, it was like, this is like a fucking roller coaster ride and I don't know where to stop.
Oh, my.
So.
Yeah, this is a two-parter.
This is going to be a two-parter for sure.
You were going to wait to let everybody down at the end, weren't you?
Oh, yes.
So rude.
Yeah, that's what I like to do.
I like to know ahead of time. So I can prepare myself.
Yeah, I guess I should have said that at the beginning. You're right. This is going to be a two-parter because there's just so much shit that goes on in this fucking story.
All right, let's get back to this.
All right, back to the bullshit with Trina. So, at this point, Trina is 14 years old and is pregnant with Ken's fucking baby.
That poor thing.
Yeah. This is when her family was like, oh, maybe we should do something.
Oh, okay.
And they're basically not okay with the relationship now. They try to press charges against Ken.
She was living with him, right?
Not yet.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, she's living at home, spending a lot of time with him. Uh-huh. He comes around whenever he wants to.
Yes. Picks her from school. And now she's pregnant.
Some people need a lot of proof.
Yeah. So the family was trying to press charges for statutory rape against Ken. He was raping Trina. 14-year-olds cannot consent.
Nope.
Not even a little bit. Nope. I don't care what anyone fucking says in this country. You can't consent. There's been some states are trying to make 14-year back to a thing. So,
there's a lot of women who were supportive of that. It's totally a women's initiative to adjust the age of consent.
Fucking hate it here. Okay, anyways.
You cannot. I can't.
I still can't. So, Ken, this fucking rat bitch.
Yes.
Threatens the family until they finally agree to drop the charges once again. Showing up to their house with a fucking shotgun.
Is the state not involved yet? Parents are responsible for being like, no, it's fine, actually. She's a hoe anyway. She's not been out in these streets. Don't worry about it.
Pretty much.
The state must.
The state's not doing shit right now at this point, obviously.
This just doesn't seem like something that, the parents would be pressing charges over.
You raise a flag.
An issue, and then someone else takes over.
But then it's back to this whole thing. No witness, no crime. If Trina's refusing to testify that this thing happened to her, they don't have any fucking proof. Okay. You can sit there. This is the frustrating part about this story. And just
paternity tests?
The justice, probably not. She probably would have to consent to that.
I don't know. Maybe it's changed.
Yeah. I hope it's changed.
I think it must have, that's why I'm like, I don't understand, but that's probably why it has changed.
Yeah, just let's pray it's changed. How about that? Everyone just, I don't know, go look up your fucking laws in your state, wherever you are, and just make sure it's changed. If it hasn't changed, fucking write somebody, call somebody.
Wow, it's a to-do list.
It's a to-do list for you.
All right.
Okay, so a year later, in 1973, a now 15-year-old Trina begs Alice to help her and her newborn baby escape Ken. Because now they're staying with them because now they have a kid together. Aww. So Alice takes Alice's kids, her kids, because remember, she has kids with them too. She takes Trina and the baby.
To all the kids.
All the kids. Mm-hmm. And Trina, which is fucking, she's still a kid too.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, yes. That's what you're saying. Okay, got it.
All the minors.
Sorry, that was whenever this lowbrow mine. So they go to Trina's aunt and uncle's house. Trina's aunt Brenda agrees to let them stay and tells them to stay inside until Trina's uncle Russ, who is a deputy sheriff.
Okay, there's potential here for Uncle Russ.
Until Russ gets home.
All right.
And he can take them somewhere safe.
Okay. This is a good plan. It's a pretty good plan.
Ken tracks the girls down.
He found them?
He found them.
How?
It's a small fucking town. There's 400 people. Where there's not many places she could probably go. She's a fucking young kid.
They're both just sad.
Yeah, they're gonna go to the people that they know are safe.
Yeah.
So.
I might have just guessed.
Yeah, probably. Probably drove by a couple houses.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, they're not here. I guess I'm gonna go here.
How many places could there be?
Yeah, for sure.
If she was surrounded by the 14-year-old, the 12-year-old who's surrounded by people who are taking good care of her.
Yeah, Trina.
It's going to be harder to groom and abduct, so.
Right.
He's like, oh, I can.
Yeah, it's very obviously that her parents kind of fucking suck.
Yeah.
So, Ken tracks the girls to this house, stands outside, and begins yelling that they need to come outside. He's standing out there with a shotgun. That they need to come outside, or he's going to blow their fucking brains out and come inside.
Oh my god. I'm scared.
Fucking, it's terrifying.
But Auntie has weapons in the home. I'm like, why is nobody turning the guns on? They must have all had them.
Maybe. Yeah, Missouri.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure. So he then convinces Trina and Alice that he's not going to hurt anybody else if they just come with him.
Oh, God. And they know they're going to be hurt.
And they know he's lying. They know he's lying. But they're also, I think they're probably worried because there's probably other kids in the house are not there. Yeah,
they're worried about the kids, but they know they're in for it.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. They unfortunately go with him in the cave and they go with him.
Yeah.
So when they get back to the farmhouse, he then tells them that he will kill every help tries to help them escape again. He's like, I'll just fucking kill anyone and tries to help you. He then beats the shit out of Alice. And trigger warning, he rapes Trina at gunpoint. Mm. It gets worse. Trigger warning.
Okay.
The next day, he loads Trina and Alice into a car and takes them to Trina's parents' house. He then forces the girl to watch as she shoots the family dog.
Okay.
And then burns Trina's family's house down.
Where are her parents?
Who the fuck knows? He burns the house down. He shoots the dog in front of Trina. He's like, this is your punishment.
Okay. Oh my God. That guy is unhinged.
He's a fucking monster.
Yeah. It's, it's like,
words can
chaos.
Express.
It's, yeah. There's no good here.
Yeah. You know, so the reason why I thought of this story, sorry, a little sidebar, is because when we watched the girl in the picture, the Netflix documentary, I was just thinking, like, some people are just fucking born bad.
Yeah.
And this feels like one of those stories where there's just, like, this human being who was just born to be fucking evil. And it feels like that.
Spiraled, for sure.
And not to get, like, existential, but I'm going to. If, like, the idea of, like, a Christian God exists and he's going to, like, bring you up and he's going to, like, judge you, I'm going to, like, show him, like, this fucking story. Be like, I'm sorry.
You're not. Okay, sorry, sorry. Just dive in for a second. Just open it, unzip it just a little bit.
Yeah.
Are you in this scenario, God is like, or whomever, is like talking to you about your shit?
Uh-huh.
And then you're like, I won't be judged. Look at this
bullshit
rat bitch over here.
Yeah, that you let happen.
Okay, valid.
You get to judge my ass for doing something that is not even like a fraction of like
I don't think it works that way. However,
I mean,
fair.
It's fair. I think most people.
It's your business. When you get up to the pearly gates, you can say whatever the fuck you want to God. Right?
Yeah.
Sky Daddy.
Sky Daddy.
You say whatever you want to him.
Sky Daddy, listen.
Only Sky Daddy would have the audacity to be like, hey, let's talk about all that shit that you did.
Yeah.
Instead of welcome.
Right.
To whatever is next.
Yeah.
You did a good job out there. It is fucking rough.
Yeah.
That human life experience is not easy.
Thanks for not being a dick.
Yeah. You did good. That's right? All. You know. So.
Yeah. That's the hope. But reasonable. Like, if it's like some fucking Christian biblical first or like Old Testament bullshit, I'm being like, dude, really? And judge my ass?
Spoiler alert. It's not.
Thank you. Thanks for the confirmation. Okay, so after the family home is burned down, Trina's parents just move out of Missouri. And they leave Trina behind with this fucking monster.
Oh, wow, you don't even want to come after this man for killing your dog and burning your house down?
Let me tell you.
Cowards.
Okay, listen. If someone kills my fucking dog, Sky Daddy can judge me then. Because I will fucking go John Wick. Like, it's not going to be pretty.
Reasonable. Totally reasonable.
Like,
these people didn't care enough to keep their own daughter.
Yeah.
Like, they were like, take her. Who needs her?
More to them move as fucking state and leave her with you.
They don't care about the dog. Or their house.
Yeah, seriously. It's just so sad. There's like something, like people who abuse animals and children and like elderly people, fucking, I feel like those people should just be like thrown to the sea or something. I don't know. Like, just.
Listen, elderly people, mostly, yes. But I think there are certain elderly people.
Okay. Jesus.
I know you didn't expect.
I really, I probably looked at you like, where the fuck are you going with this?
Like, children and dogs, 100% of the time, yes.
Are you talking about, like, people, boomers who are, like, think
I'm
that women should
about,
be?
Like, this guy is going to be 78 someday. So, like, you know, he deserves a little abuse, you know. And some of them are just mean, and nobody deserves this.
Yeah.
But you could, you know, put your tongue out of them or, like,
yeah, I mean, there are some people who put their parents in a home because they're like, you deserve to be here.
Sure.
Which I guess.
I know, but yes.
It's not just great, like, but it's gross.
You're talking about people who pick on and abuse.
Yes.
Like.
Someone's fucking the grandma.
Vulnerable.
Yeah, the vulnerable.
Yes.
Someone who just, like, can't necessarily stick up for themselves. Just,
completely.
There's just something fucking wrong with people like that.
Yes.
And, like, usually I know there's, like, a system of abuse. They usually have, like, been abused themselves, blah, blah, blah. But, like,
yeah,
it gets to a point where you're like, listen, I don't fucking care anymore. You're a monster.
For sure. This guy is trash.
This guy is a fucking monster.
Yes.
For sure. Okay. So, after this whole ordeal happens with the dog and the house and the parents moving, Trina goes to the doctor after her rape and tells this doctor the entire story.
Okay.
He calls the police and social services.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So Kenneth is charged with assault, arson, statutory rape, and flourishing a deadly weapon.
Oh, okay.
Which sounds way too fun of a charge.
Because of the doctor.
Yes, because of the doctor.
Okay. Bravo.
However.
Okay, sure. But the doctor still did the right thing.
Yeah. All of these charges were going to be dropped again because they relied on Trina to testify against Ken.
Is this too much pressure for Trina? Can somebody do their fucking job here?
Absolutely.
It should not be her responsibility.
It shouldn't be on the shoulders of a fucking teenager.
No. She's already has his children, right?
Yes. Yes.
That's enough.
That is enough. So at this moment, Trina is sent to a foster home with her baby.
This is, okay. She's responsible for putting this man away, but she's still a child, so we gotta send her to a foster home. Like, I can't.
Yeah, she's not even 18. So,
I'm angry.
This is where Ken begins stalking and intimidating the foster family that has her.
No.
He parks out in front of the house almost every day.
It's not even their fault. They don't have their anything fucking to do with fault. It.
He calls Trina every day. Basically, like, gives her threats. It's like, you need to come home.
Nightmare. It's a living nightmare for this girl.
And there's even a point where he threatens the foster family who had a daughter. They said that he was going to trade the girl for the girl.
Fuck this guy.
This guy. I'm fucking telling you, this guy is the worst of the worst.
Oh my God, I hate him.
Yeah, me too. Seriously. So, unfortunately, because Trina has been groomed for multiple years at this point, she goes back to Ken around 1974. So, between the foster family and going back to Ken, she was living with her grandparents in Kansas. She kind of didn't like living with her grandparents for whatever reason. Mm. I would assume if her fucking parents sucked as much as they did, maybe the grandparents also are equally sucky.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
It gets to a point where she calls Ken.
Wow.
And he comes and gets her. From Kansas.
Well, okay. Yeah.
It was then. God, this bullet sucks too.
She's like basically daughter, you know, of his at this point.
Uh-huh. It's very much the girl in the picture.
Yeah.
It's fucking gross.
You're right.
Okay, so it was then when Ken and Robert came up with a plan that Ken should marry Trina because it was harder to make a rape charge stick.
Mm-hmm.
When Trina was his wife.
I was going to say that earlier with Alice, or maybe it was a different set of women where it was like, oh, like he was raping both of them, but there would likely not have been anything again. Like marital rape wouldn't have been a crime.
Mm-mm.
And so
really a crime now, and sadly.
I know, that's true.
It's fucking up. It's just fucked up all around. So, by the way, Ken still married to Sharon during this. He finally gets divorced from her.
Okay.
Sharon's probably like, thank fucking God.
Wait, Sharon is after Alice?
Sharon was before Alice.
He wasn't married to Alice?
No.
Oh, okay.
So he gets a divorce from Sharon.
Wait, are they still all living together? Or he's just like moved on?
I think Sharon at this point is living with his family.
Oh, right. You said that.
Yeah. Okay. So he then goes and convinces Trina's mother to give him their consent for Ken to marry Trina.
Sure.
Which, once again, this family has fucking failed her.
You know, they're like, oh, well, you know, they're married now.
Right? Like,
I know. Yeah.
So the scumbag lawyer then gets Trina to sign a statement saying that she wishes to drop all the charges against her now husband, Ken. You know,
the lawyer is really starting to get on my nerves.
The lawyer fucking sucks.
Not cool.
It's not cool. Like, how are you a person who was educated enough to be a fucking lawyer?
Unscrupulous.
And no sees scruples. This shit and just like, okay, as long as he's giving me money, I don't care. Like,
yeah, I don't care about these kids.
He's just like causing trauma all around and just like doesn't give a fuck. Trash. The lawyer is just as bad as Ken, I would say. Honestly.
Reasonable.
The compliancy there is fucking gross.
Astute observation.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I have them. So, after this, Ken kicks Alice to the curb. And her kids. His kids, too. He's just like, goodbye. She happily gets the fuck out of town.
Oh, for sure.
She's like, okay, goodbye. Ugh, good luck. Get laid. Get Trina fucked. Out of here.
Sure, but she was also like, damn, like leaving Trina alone.
She has to leave Trina alone because obviously.
You have to. You have to go. You have to take care of yourself and your kids.
Yeah. So she settles in another town called Maryville and she gets remarried at some point to somebody else.
I hope to God he was a nice person.
And like, there's nothing else that happens to Alice in the story, so sounds like she kind of got out.
Hopefully.
Yeah. So, at this point, within 4 years, Ken is charged with 19 different felonies. 19.
And he's already had like dozens of charges.
All of these 19 charges are dropped.
Wow, he knows what... Yeah, he's just threatening people.
This is a guy who's fucking illiterate.
Sorry, is witness intimidation a crime at that time? They called it witness bribery? Yeah,
there's a witness bribery. But, like, I think it's a thing that's hard to prove.
It also seems a little different.
Like, if you're, like, unwilling to testify, then, like, you can't testify that you were tampered with, right?
Bribery is different than I'll kill you. Mm-hmm. Bribery is, like, you know.
Yeah. So... is at this time, July 1976, Ken shoots a local farmer by the name of Romaine Henry because Ken was out shooting pheasants outside of hunting season on Romaine's property. So his kids like, oh, hey, Romaine's kids are like, hey, I hear gunshots out there. So Romaine goes to check it out. He sees Ken's fucking pickup truck. He's like, nope, not dealing with that guy. Like, fucking shoot a pheasant. I don't care.
Yeah, I'll let him do whatever he wants.
Yeah. However, Ken sees that Romaine, like, drives by and, like, looks at him and is like, oh, he knows what I'm doing.
Okay.
So Ken responds by parking in the middle of the road, blocking Romaine from leaving, and then shoots this poor farmer in the fucking stomach in his car.
He killed him.
He didn't kill him.
Oh, God.
Romaine survives.
Thank God.
And once again, Ken gets off for this fucking crime.
He's a menace.
So, the reason why he got off for this crime is because he either threatened, convinced, or bribed two raccoon hunters, which sounds very Missouri, that Ken was actually with them when the crime occurred.
Okay.
And because his lawyer, once again, was able to draw out the case by filing appeals and gave Ken optimum time to threaten Romaine and his family to the point where Romaine was like, fuck it, let's drop the charges.
Jesus.
Yeah.
This man, what's his name, the lawyer?
Robert. Robbie. Robert McFadden.
He's got to be the reason lawyers have a bad rap.
Fucking defense lawyers, at least, right? Like, it just...
Like, started here.
Oh, shit. His name's Richard.
We love the disrespect of calling a man something other than
you know what?
His real name.
Yeah, fuck his name. His name's Richard. But, like, we should just call him Dick.
We should.
Dick McFadden. Fuck that guy. Okay, so. We're going to get into some more crimes and specific dates that lead up to a very fateful date for Ken. But we're going to do that in part two.
Oh, shit! So mean.
I know. But, like I said, I originally, this episode was only going to be one episode, but there is just, so much shit that happens that you have to understand, like, why the town got to the point it did.
You're right. Oh, you know what I was thinking? I forgot about that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, damn, we're up at the top of a hill, and we're just going to go pummeling down. But in a good way. In a way that, like, at the end of the hill, or, like, you're at the bottom of the... It's just, like, powder, or it's just, like, a pile of leaves at the bottom of this hill on the journey of your podcast to the lovely place where he is beat to death by the town justice.
Sorry, when you were describing that, I was wondering if I was having a stroke. I was just like, what the fuck are you saying?
I'm visualizing.
Yeah, I love the visualization for you. I was just like, lost. So yeah, so we will be back next week. Take whatever metaphor you want. Back to scary. Sorry, just snorted in the mic.
If you can't listen to me ramble,
I'm not saying I can't.
For like 30 seconds.
Bitch, I was listening. I was just like, I'm lost. Anyways,
well, I look forward to it.
Yeah, so we will be back, and hold on to your butts, because it definitely gets a little bit more roller coastery, and the horror is not done. So we will talk to you next week, and until next time,
stay grimly curious.
Thank you so much for listening. For podcast updates and episode photos, be sure to follow us on Instagram at Grimly Podcast.
Also, be sure to rate and review our episodes, and we will see you next week for another episode.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.